is the Dr. Nick and Hot Aussie Chick Show, where we talk everything casinos and help you get the advantage.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are, whatever time it is, you're listening to Dr. Nick.
And the Hot Aussie Chick and our special guest.
Very special guest. We have with us today probably one of the top gaming legal minds, at least top three within gaming, attorney Bob Nersessian. Are you Bob Nersessian Esquire or just Bob Nersessian?
I sort of stay away from Esquire because I think Esquire means squire, which just means I tend a horse.
And you do not own any horses.
No.
Do you want a horse?
I own a dog.
Is it a big dog, like a horse dog?
No, it's a little dog. It's a turnspit.
Okay,
well. A turnspit?
Yes.
Let's start with that. What is a turnspit?
First, it's thought to be extinct, but I have one.
Right.
And it's a dog that was an indoor dog in the 1600s through the 1800s that actually turned the spit in the cooking fireplace by running on a wheel that was up near the ceiling.
Oh, wow.
So it's short, stocky, muscular, long-winded, and has the curled tail in back to stay out of the machinery, and otherwise looks a bit like a beagle, except that it's longer.
So now, it's perfect for an Aussie spit.
I don't know what an Aussie spit is.
Well, kind of, I suppose, like an Alderney spit. We put pigs or, you know,
this is for cooking
spins,
the meat, yes.
Yes, and it spins.
Exactly. And that's why they called the dog a turn spit.
I need one.
Ironically, they say dogs emulate the owners. You're short, stocky, muscular, and also long-winded, Bob.
Oh, isn't that witty? My tail doesn't curl.
Do you have a tail?
So, Bob.
Once upon a time.
Gaming law. I'm sure there's lots of people that are wondering, you know, exactly what gaming law is. What areas do you delve into?
Well, I like to think I delve into all of them. And then again, none of them, because mostly what I'm practicing is contract law, trying to get money back for gamblers where casinos have taken it, even stolen it at times. And tort law, which is civil wrongs committed against other people, and I'm representing people who get beat up or falsely imprisoned by casinos, which also happens.
So beat up, by beat up, do you mean like beat up physically? Like I'm punching the air right now? No
Sometimes.
One can see that. Oh boy, wow.
Now also, fair disclosure, Bob is my attorney, and we worked on a couple cases together, and more recent, or actually our first case, we got introduced to each other probably 2010, where I was ejected from a casino and wrongly, and Bob took the case, and I think that was the first one of its kind where a professional player was ejected from a casino for no other reason, from a casino hotel rather, than for no other reason than just winning a little bit of money.
Yeah. We wouldn't win it today.
Yeah, that case was actually went to the Nevada Supreme Court. And
I did it on a later case, and the Nevada Supreme Court overruled 500 years of common law and said that there is no innkeeper's duty applicable to a Nevada casino that has a hotel. The innkeeper's duty is universal. They just decided, apparently, that we're going to support casinos and that industry, and we're going to reverse the law that is 500 years old and applied in every other state. And they did this, God, I can't believe I'm going to say this on the record, but they did this by providing a partial quote of a statute and omitting a necessary part to the analysis. I think the opinion is entirely disingenuous, and it eventually ended up being a 2-2 split, but that confirmed the dismissal by the district court.
Now, could that case go to the Supreme Court again of Nevada, and could that be overturned again?
It can be, but precedent sort of sets its roots. So if it gets there again, it can be reversed. It's also difficult to get it there again, because if you make an argument on settled law, the courts are wont to say that your case was frivolous to begin with, and your client and even you as an attorney would be subject to attorney's fees.
Wow. So they just so legislating from the bench.
Yeah, which was even doubly curious because there is a statute in Nevada that says the common law shall be the rule of all decisions in the courts of our state, and they apparently ignored that law too and said we're not going to follow the common law, we're going to change the common law.
Wow.
But only for casinos. So apparently you still have an innkeeper's duty if you're just a Marriott without gambling.
So, gambling law. You said you like to do all kinds of gambling law.
I didn't. I said I do all kinds.
Okay. Yeah, let's not twist your words. You do all kinds of gambling law. So, what's about listeners are poker players? What about things like there was a recent issue where a man called another man a nigger, I can say that because it's what happened, at a poker table and was kicked on out. So if a player's kicked on out for whatever reason, you know, of a tournament that they've paid entry to, do you take up those kinds of cases?
Well, I'm not going to take up the case you just described.
But I mean, you know, getting kicked out. Getting booted out, I mean. You know, of a tournament for whatever.
Well, I have taken that case, and I've gotten money on that case as a general rule. I mean, the doctrine that comes into that would be a license coupled with an interest.
Mm-hmm.
And the case that Nick was talking about, the Slade case, deals with throwing someone out. But it does say if they're thrown out for an illegal purpose, then you could still sue. And I think it's certainly arguable that it is an illegal purpose to take that guy's entry fee, keep it, and put him on the street.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, there you go, poker players. If for any reason you're ejected, that is morally acceptable. I mean, you know, I don't want to be sending horrible people to you, Bob. Bob is your man.
Oh, let me say, I'm so busy that for everybody who listens to this podcast, I'm not really interested in your business.
There you go. So that was a waste of time.
You tend to have a set clientele.
Oh, not at all. If I had a set clientele, that would mean that I was taking cases where these people knew that they were setting up casinos or something like that, and I can say unequivocally that I have had people sitting across my desk and said, yeah, what's the EV on X, Y, and Z?
Mm-hmm.
And meaning, if I can get myself back roomed, what's my EV?
Right.
And my answer is always the same. It's zero because I'm not taking that case.
Right.
Okay.
Tell me, did you follow the case of Phil Ivey? Where
I'm familiar with the Ivy case.
Right. What are your thoughts on that whole thing?
There are two. There's one in Crawford in England.
And the Bellagio.
No, the Borgata.
Borgata, yes. Yeah. I'm familiar with both of them. The Borgata case is still on appeal, right?
Both of them are on appeal right now.
Yeah, well, I think the English case...
That's going to the High Court in England.
No, I say that, of course, because Phil Ivey is obviously a gambler in all areas. You know, everything from poker to blackjack to craps to, you know...
Well, on the English case, having read it, I am really... England apparently has a different take on gaming that bars what they call, and I'll put this in quotes, ill practices.
Mm-hmm.
Something short of cheating, okay? Which strikes me as if you give a court or the law something that ambiguous, then you really have no law, and you give to the judges cases that say, so do you like this guy or not like this guy?
Right.
And that's garbage, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And looking at the Phil Ivey case and what gambling has been from the from its inception, back when they were throwing bones as cavemen for who got the extra piece of meat.
Right.
the idea was to win. It's a competition.
Uh-huh.
And you can set the rules, and the rules are set for in Mini Bach, which was Phil's game with Sun. If the rules are set and you don't break those rules, you're just competing. Right. And you can take it to the farthest edge you want. Well, Phil lost because this judge decided that edge sorting, if you will, is an ill practice.
Right.
Well, what a load of crap.
Well, everyone
and
seems
now,
so
but
great.
Now they're sitting here doing the same stuff here, and I don't understand why the lawyers arguing these cases can't get over that hurdle and get back onto the competition thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at other areas of gambling and stuff, for example, it has always been the duty of the person who has the cards to protect their cards.
Of course.
And that's written in not only poker books, but poker authorities that are apply the rules in tournaments and everything else.
And even if it wasn't, it's common sense.
Canasta has the same rule. The international board governing Canasta and Bridge as well. And there are international boards that govern these competitions, and they acknowledge it's a competition, and they spell out the rules. And apparently, and I think this has a large part of it too, casinos are exempt because they're in business to pay taxes to the state.
Correct.
Right.
I don't doubt that you look like that's an odd thing to say, but when you look at the seven figures that Mr. Ivy's dealing with, and you put that on the bottom line of the Borgata or Crockford's, and then you look at the percentage that a casino has to pay in profits, the state, the UK in one instance, and Borgata is
MGM.
Yeah, but which
New Jersey,
yes. Or New Jersey in the other, and you look at the percentages they pay, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars if you were to write that right onto the profit level for both the UK and for New Jersey if they hold for Mr. Ivy. Does that have anything to do with this? Oh, heaven forfend, who would think that the state would care about taking more money from citizens?
Could that be a conflict of interest? Can they get a change of venue
at
one point?
Where are you going to change venue to?
Yes. Impossible.
Impossibly.
Well, you agree basically with every person I've ever asked that question to. Except the magistrate.
Yes.
I've asked him.
Well, you're only asking gamblers. Okay?
Right. Good
point. If you ask lay people out on the street, well, here's what he did and here's how it was done, I think you'd get a pretty even split without having read the rules that's cheating.
Mm-hmm.
Except the rules say that you can and can't do, and nobody said you can't do that.
Ironically, what Phil Ivey did, he actually asked for a certain set of conditions, just to clarify. He wanted to use a certain dealer. He wanted to use a Chinese-speaking dealer for Sun to communicate with him. He wanted a certain shuffle machine. He wanted the same deck of cards used, and he wanted, I believe that was it. But in order to get those rules for the game, Borgata said, okay, you have to put $10 million in the cage, you have to play an average bet of $100,000 a hand, you have to play 8 hours a day. So those were the terms of conditions that were agreed upon by both parties.
Mm-hmm.
Both parties saw an opportunity to make money. Phil was obviously the smarter man in this case. Now, casinos don't like to be made a fool of, so obviously they're going to fight it.
Well, they don't want to lose their money either, which would make more sense.
Well, they weren't particularly fighting it very hard until that judge made his decision.
Right.
In the
speaking
Crockford's
of
case.
A judge, I believe I was talking to another attorney, Robert Loeb, and he was talking to us about a case. We're going to have Bob Loeb on probably next week. A case in New Jersey where...
Wow, you're not going to have so many listeners if you keep targeting attorneys for your
It's an interesting aspect. It's an interesting insight, and we'll probably record it and then wait for a while.
One of these days, somebody's got to get Bob and me on together.
We should do that. We should definitely do that.
Anyhow, what were you saying?
They're saying that a judge ruled, which was a terrible ruling from Bob's perspective, that said that if you win money at a casino at a significant level, you are obviously cheating, which was the judge's exact words. which I think is just absurd.
Wow. I'm not familiar with that case.
I will get it to you, and you can review it.
Did you see this case? Does it say that?
Bob Loeb, I got it directly from Bob Loeb.
And you read the case?
I haven't read it yet.
Okay.
But maybe the language wasn't as accurate, but that was the gist of it. And, you know, Bob Loeb is a good author. And speaking of authors, Bob Nersesian actually is the author of two great books on gaming law. The first, Beat the Player, which is how old?
Beat the Players.
Beat the Players, plural.
It's 2006.
2006.
That still applies?
Yes.
Well, no, that's more of an expose.
Okay.
And the more recent one, which he was about halfway through when we did our case, which he recently published about 2 years ago?
In 2016.
2016, which is 2008, so that would be 2 years
ago. The Law for Gamblers, which is already outdated.
Right. Oh, it is.
In some senses. Well, the Slade case that we started talking about came down maybe 3 months after it was published. And obviously, since I'm the guy who wrote everything on the Slade case and felt so sure of myself, and I really did because I'm still confident that I had the law correct, I put together a lot of that very same analysis, which now the Nevada Supreme Court has rejected.
Right.
And
that's still a good read. Right?
Oh, yeah. And there's only one small portion of the book.
Right.
There, I believe, speaking of long-winded, boy, that has a ton of footnotes in it, that book.
Well, the footnotes are because...
Right.
The footnotes aren't necessarily for you.
Right. They're for lawyers.
That is what is called a horn book. And it sets forth the law, and it provides the research for the law, so that any lawyer who reads it can use it as a primer for...
A brief.
How to write a brief and where to find the case law to support the position, etc. Yes.
Now let's digress a minute back to the first book, Beat the Players. There was a great story, actual case, and I'm not sure if you took the case or not, but it happened in Michigan where there was a nickel.
It wasn't my case. That's Neil Fink's case.
Neil Fink's case. There was actually a coin that was in a slot machine hopper.
Tray.
Had the hopper. Tray, where they put
the hopper is where the money is inside the machine.
Oh, the tray, right.
The tray.
It was in the tray. And a page... Well, why don't you explain the case a little bit?
Oh, goodness.
This could be something everyone wants to know. I found a ticket just yesterday in a $1 bill. Am I allowed to put that in a machine and use that?
I'm looking at a case right now where I think it was the Win. Took a guy into custody because he had seen a slot machine that had credits on it, and he pushed the cash out and took the ticket.
Oh, so I better not do that.
No, I think they're dead wrong, and they kept the ticket, and I'm pretty sure they stole that money from the guy who got the ticket, who pulled out the ticket, and probably committed false imprisonment by holding him against his will while they looked at the matter.
Right, so I can take a ticket, I just got to be careful
I think
I don't
you can.
Grab hold of
the
me.
Law is that abandoned property, which includes lost property, belongs to the finder.
Right, so like finders keepers, losers weepers.
And that applies also if it is lost property on the property of another, or abandoned property on the property of another. It doesn't belong to the landowner.
No.
It belongs to the person who picks it up.
Right.
Okay? So that's the case in Michigan, too. It's called Romansky versus Detroit Entertainment. And in Romansky,
there was
actually
some maritime law that applied there that you discussed a little bit in the thing.
Maritime law?
Well, because it was on a river boat. Or
no, Detroit, no. That was a different...
Oh, that was a different...
Yeah. So
that's
many
not
cases.
Romance. But Romansky, and I've talked about it before, but I welcome the opportunity to talk about it again because it is the most outrageous set of... One of the most outrageous set of circumstances I've ever seen for a casino to undertake. Estelle Romansky, if you know Detroit, lived in a suburb called Troy, which is a relatively upper-middle-class suburb. She's a single older woman, as I recall, And she, together with a bunch of like-situated persons, took a one-day junket into downtown Detroit, where they pick up these, I'll just say it, old people, and they take them to the casino, and they pay a flat rate, and they get a buffet, mm-hmm. they get the bus ride, they get mm-hmm. the bus ride back. It's a junket,
mm-hmm.
a one-day junket for retirees, if you will. And she signs up, and she's there with some friends who also signed up. Bunch of old people, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they go to the casino, and they're there for a little while, and Estelle's walking down an aisle, and she notices that there is a nickel.
5 cents.
Okay. 5 cents. Five cents for the Aussies or the...
Sitting cents. In the payout tray of a slot machine. She goes, oh, found a nickel. She picks it up. Then, apparently in sight of the casino too, what does she do with this nickel? She looks at another slot machine right next to it. She puts the nickel in the slot machine, and she slides in $20 of her own.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
So she's got $20.05.
She's got $20.05, and she's going to be playing at the casino.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets accosted and taken into custody for theft of that nickel, or suspected theft of that nickel.
Wow.
They actually, in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals mentions, I believe in their decision, that the casino's perspective is that she is a slot walker, which is a
slot walker.
Well, slot walker.
Well, yes, it's yes. Not, slot.
It's
slot.
Not a, it's not a big, it is,
excuse my accent.
There are people who walk through casinos looking for abandoned money.
Right.
Be it in trays or extra credits on mm-hmm. a machine or a chip that has fallen near the craps table. And the people who are doing that are thought of as slot walkers, and they are looked down on by the casino. And I agree, rightly so.
Yeah, that's pretty lame.
As
really
this is. Doesn't really help with our image, and we don't want these people in here
mm-hmm.
whose goal is to pick up lost stuff
right.
and then book with it and get out of here and whatever. So they said they detained her for suspicion of being a slot walker, which is garbage from what they saw. She's not a slot walker.
Right.
She's a little old lady who saw a nickel in a payout tray.
Find a pay
and
pick it up.
You're not a slot walker if you put
$20.
Yeah, if you follow it with your own $20.
Right. That's clear and evident.
And so they took her into custody, and then they put her out of the casino. And it's a summer day in Detroit. Not as hot as where we are today in Las Vegas, but not a pleasant place. And she's stuck there waiting for, I believe, hours before she can get on her bus.
Wow.
And and the casino is of the perspective of...
she went with.
Yeah, and they're running around looking for her, I think. And then she sued. And I think the federal district court jury gave her over $800,000 for the indignities and punitive damages, etc.
That nickel paid well.
Well, it did, but that wasn't what she was about. And
no.
And I will tell you, I'm pretty sure Neil Fink, the attorney who had that case, wasn't expecting $800,000 either. He was expecting something solid, because when a business the size of Detroit Entertainment does that to a little old lady that they have invited,
mm-hmm.
I think they also canceled her lunch.
Oh, wow.
Because she
so
wasn't
she
able to use her.
Was that at the MGM or Motor City? Or
I don't remember
Greektown.
Which one. The company that owns it, it's not Greektown.
Detroit Motor City Casino, probably?
I don't know. I don't remember.
There's only three. There's Motor City, MGM.
What? Yeah.
Whatever
the case is.
So, anyway, where were we? Oh, so they sue, and the jury came back at over $800,000. The Sixth Circuit reduced it to $600,000. And you can't really fault the Sixth Circuit's logic. The casino is going, all it was a nickel, and the answer is no. All it was your customer who you invited, who then you did this to, and did it with craziness. You can't be insane when you address your customers.
Right.
And, boy, there's a good rule for casinos to follow. But, unfortunately, you can see from the Romanski decision, the Grosch decision in Mississippi, from the Lockhart decision that I have here, the Grosjean decision that I also have here, they do act insane, okay?
Is that because they think they're untouchable?
I wish I could say yes. And indeed, after the fact, some of their arguments, I'm going to get back to Romanski here in a second, some of their arguments would tend to indicate that they think that. As much as anything, I think it has to do with hiring and training.
Right.
And the fact that they put a uniform on people who shouldn't be wearing a uniform and give them some sense of authority over the average man, which they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And with that sense of importance, these people who are being employed by the casinos completely lose all sense of perspective. And next thing you know, you're holding a little old lady for a nickel that was rightfully hers to begin with. And on that rightfully hers, and on the slot ticket thing, I'll point out that the Sixth Circuit came up with a couple of things, because the excuse that that Detroit Entertainment argued was, one, she stole it, okay? And the idea that she's...
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, they said, if it's on our property, this was their argument, if it's on our property and you don't own it, it has to be ours, okay? Except, and you're shaking your head up and down a little bit, but
right,
since,
like,
time,
okay.
Since time immemorial and all the way back to the guy who originally set down the way the Western civilization common law works, a guy named Blackstone, abandoned property can't be stolen. Can't be.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
Goes against the definition.
Okay.
So I'm a little confused. The reason I'm nodding my head up and down and looking all confused is, in Australia, if you like find a sum of money, whatever it may be, you have to hand it to the police, and after X amount of time has passed, then you can claim the
Are some localities with statutes that say that here as well, but the common law doesn't say that.
Right. Okay.
The common law, and unless you're in one of these nominal jurisdictions with such a statute, the rule is finders keepers.
Right.
And mostly, and the statutes that do that also limit it to currency, I believe, as a general rule.
Right, okay.
Currency or a treasure trove.
Right.
And a treasure trove is something that somebody actually hid.
That would be lovely to
and
find.
And it's evident that they hid it. So, in any event, returning back to Romanski again, she gets $600,000, and the casino was insane.
How long did that take to go to run through the motions of that?
Oh, I don't know, but these things will usually take, if it's all the way up on an appeal and everything else like that, anywhere from 3 to 6 years.
Wow.
To run the main case, a year and a half to four.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not a quick system or a quick process.
And believe it or not, there are some third world countries that envy at the speed at which our system works.
Yes. I think there's some third world countries or even some first world countries who have set up their justice system to make sure that 50% of the people die before it's time for a decision. I'm familiar with one case out of Cyprus.
Yes.
That was a 9.5 year case.
Holy cow.
And that's at the first level.
Well, the Grosjean case was exceptionally long. Was it not your first case that you cut your teeth on, the big one?
Well, that's not the first case I cut my teeth on.
Well, was that your biggest case? Or your most?
Today wasn't my biggest case. It's close. I don't know for sure.
I mean, most influential, because you had a case that
but it was
night,
definitely my first influential case.
Right.
My first case was against the Maxim.
Where is that
and
at?
The Maxim is now, God, what's it called? It's the casino just east of the Flamingo Hilton.
When what happened?
Westgate. No, Westin.
The Westin. Oh, okay.
Yes. Not the Westgate, the Westin.
It's a small one.
Yeah.
What happened? What
it
happened?
Was just a, it was a back rooming of a card counter.
Oh.
Yeah. And people weren't bringing that kind of litigation back then, and I started with one of those. And
was that, did you, when you graduated law school from Western Michigan, or was it?
Wayne State.
Wayne State. It was in Michigan, I knew that. Yeah. Was it your intent to go into gaming law, or did it just kind of find you?
Oh, God, no. I wasn't even in Nevada. This was an accident.
And now you're in the Blackjack Hall of Fame.
Well, if you talk to my wife, Thea Sankiewicz, who is also my partner, you'll find out people ask, so, why did you move to Las Vegas? And our answer is, we're from Detroit. Mm-hmm. And they go, okay, why did you move to Las Vegas? And the retort to that is, what part of we're from Detroit don't you understand?
Well, I don't understand any of
it. Well, I'm from Chicago, and those winters
Eastern
and Midwest can be pretty brutal.
And honest to goodness, as I say that, it is completely tongue-in-cheek because there are so many things about Southeast Michigan that I miss. Not the least of which is affordable cottages on the water.
Mm. And you know what?
You can't get one of those in the West.
Now, I was born in Michigan, and one of the pieces of home that I have at our local Smith's is the Verner's Ginger Ale, which is exclusively made in Michigan, which is some good stuff, is it not?
I don't think it's exclusively made in Michigan anymore. I think they're actually, I think it's owned by Pepsi, and they're even bottling it in California now.
Well, whatever the case is, that's some good ginger ale. Verner's Ginger Ale, not getting paid, but be careful when you sip it because you will get spritzed.
Sorry.
I can't disagree with Verner's at all. A recent social media thing that somebody sent me had a meme of the side of a convenience store with a big Verner's mural on the side, and it says, and it's a Michigan meme, and it says, where I come from, this isn't only a soft drink, it's medicine.
It is. It's good stuff.
You know, the people back home would put their children to bed if they had a cold with a glass of warm Verner's.
Wow.
And the other thing, at my house, when we make the Christmas ham,
you put the Verner's on it.
It goes in the roaster.
Yes.
The roaster, the black thing that everybody has with the dome top. It goes in there, and 2 liters of Verner's are poured over the top of it.
Wow.
And that's how it steeps for hours.
And it is good stuff.
Yes,
boy.
It is. It's a wonderful flavor. It's called a ginger ale. It doesn't necessarily taste like any other ginger ale you'll ever have.
Well, twice as spritzy.
Yes, I can't explain it. I can't explain it. Okay, so last time I was in Vegas, around a year ago, I was at a casino. This is just to clarify for everyone. I asked them for a whole week to fix a damn door. I'm like, someone's going to get hurt from this giant glass door. This is in my room. It bangs, hits my ankle, puts me out of action, scars me for life. This is not the kind of stuff you do, right? You are completely and utterly well away
personal
from
injury,
that.
No personal injury.
That's
slip and falls, no.
Right.
There's so a billboard.
I mostly what I do, I limit to intentional torts, which is when the casino is on purpose breaking the law towards
a
customer.
Right.
Not necessarily only players. Okay. I've represented very successfully. Because, you see, while players are caught up in this, they're far from exclusive. Mm-hmm. The insanity by security at casinos extends far beyond players.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I have one verdict out of the District of Nevada, multiple six figures, where the casino My client was staying at the casino. He was out walking around, doing the Vegas sightseeing thing.
Mm-hmm.
And found, or went into a bar and was sitting there drinking. And caught up a conversation with the people around him. And they, at the end of the night, okay, said, "We'll give you a ride back to your hotel."
That's the casino or the people?
The people said he'd give him a ride.
Right.
He'd made friends at a bar, and they're giving him a ride back to the casino.
Gotcha.
So they give him a ride back to the casino, and really nobody in this vehicle saw or knew anything of this. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but certainly if it did, apparently a cab had gotten too close and scratched its side across the front of the car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cab drivers have to get in trouble if their cars come back damaged,
mm-hmm.
and especially if it's blamed on him.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody in the car even knew this happened. And he's a passenger in the back seat. And they continue forward, pull up, and they're dropping him off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when all of a sudden, casino security surrounds the vehicle.
Okay.
Cab driver had reported apparently this vehicle he was in for a hit and run.
Oh wow.
Yeah, they hit and ran all the way to where they're dropping my client off on the same property, but it's a hit and run.
Right.
Okay. Again, casino insanity. And my client's the only one staying there. Security takes the driver into custody and tells everyone else they have to get off of the property. He says, "I'm a guest, I have a room." And they said, "Get off of our property."
And he's just in the car.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's going, "Wow. I can't, I have a room."
Right.
And they're going, "You have to get off of our property, we told you." And then they arrested him for trespassing when he didn't leave. And then they held him in a casino security office and literally manacled him to the floor.
Wow.
Okay.
Does this stuff happen to women? I just have to interrupt.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. And my point is, again, it's a guest sitting in a car.
Right.
And you have now handcuffed him to a floor because
That's pretty crazy.
Because you're not letting him get his stuff?
Now I see what you mean by by casino insanity.
Yeah.
I see what he means now.
Are these people just not logical or reasonable or what is?
They have various policies or what have you that they've been.
I can't imagine that the top executives of a company like an MGM or whatever, or Caesars, if you called the CEO of Caesars and told them what they were doing, I can't imagine that he would be okay with.
Well, it sounds like it's that whole uniform power tripping
thing. Yeah.
I think you got it right for
any time where you have a
disconnect. I'm not going to give names or anything, but I'll give you another one that's out there hanging out right now. A guy is sitting at and this has been confirmed, okay, by the casino.
Right.
Or the casino's agents. He's sitting at a table playing blackjack. It is a very, very slow time of day. Frankly, it's six or 7 a.m. the day after a holiday.
Right.
So the place is a desert.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Desert in the desert.
And so the pit boss, where he's playing blackjack, and him are just chatting. The pit boss isn't busy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Turns out that this guy, who's visiting from out of state, and this is a great way to make Nevada love tourists or to encourage tourists to come here. He's playing blackjack, and the conversation goes something like this. Pit boss, "So what'd you do all day yesterday?" Well, you know, it's 6 in the morning.
Right.
And he goes, "Well, we went shooting." And he goes, "Oh, really? You got guns?" He goes, "Yeah," and he describes what his are. And then the pit boss comes back and says, "Ah, I've essentially, I've got the same one, or I've got one like this, and he's right. And they're both shooters, and they shoot at ranges, for right. God's
right.
sakes.
Right. Okay. Not at people or no. at ranges. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Next thing you know, security comes up from behind him, puts him on the floor, and throws him in handcuffs.
What the hell?
I know.
Isn't Nevada an open carry state?
Well, he didn't have a gun.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, if it's an open carry state, you'd have to have the gun showing.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Turns out, it appears that a dealer heard the guy said, "Yeah, I've got guns, but they're not here. They're in New Jersey or whatever it was." Okay. And the dealer called security and said, "There's a guy at thus and such table with a gun."
Oh, wow.
All right? Except that security, in approaching, sees, one, he doesn't have a gun. Okay? He's not brandishing. And he and the pit boss, or whatever, whichever pit critter it was, are sitting there having a social conversation. And this is the way they approach it. They don't come up to the guy and say, "Sir, are you carrying?"
Right.
Or
that would be a nice thing to do.
Yeah. Well, or ignore it because you've seen he doesn't have a gun.
Right.
And you can carry CCW in this state. If mm-hmm. he actually does have a gun, you don't know it's illegal. You right. don't know anything.
He could be a lawful, but FBI agents required to carry weapons. So
yeah, but instead, apparently, the default tackle. Position for casino security is tackle this guy and put him in handcuffs. What the hell? So we've been at this for a while. I think, you know, the idea that casino security can be insane is
sounds it to me.
Is well...
I'm kind of worried. Sound.
Well,
and, you know... One of the in the converse, I don't want to just solely go to casino security. Security, wherever it is, has been insane for a long time. Where it's gotten control of to some degree is
in every country that I've come across, yeah, for the record.
Big box mercantile seems to have gotten a handle on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it used to be that they thought they could do anything to anybody on the slightest hint that they thought they might possibly be a shoplifter.
Mm-hmm.
That's changed now. You know, the loss prevention personnel inside Big Box Mercantile is trained to death on what not to do. Nobody seems to be doing that in the casinos and in many other areas where security is out there. And again, you put a uniform on somebody, you give them what appears to be apparent authority, you mm-hmm. let them loose, what are mm-hmm. they going to do?
Well, apparently they need to be trained in what not to do so that they don't do what they
right.
think they should. And
it seems to me, and for the record, Bob is a part of my Aaliyah Consulting Group organization, and we have tried heavily to market this type of seminars to casinos about what not to do.
I'm a little... Okay, I'm part of Aaliyah Marketing?
Aaliyah Consulting Group. We have put your... In a sense, Aaliyah Consulting Group is the website that Danny Curtis and I started. And we put a bunch of high-profile people on there. And I believe this was like three years ago. We've been trying to market this type of approach to casinos.
That one. I'm waiting for my paycheck.
Well, I'm waiting for a check, too, from them as well.
Apparently, casinos don't need
services. Yeah, for whatever reason, casinos refuse to spend a few $1,000s on training their employees from a legal expert like Bob on what not to do.
They don't always refuse. I have spoken at G2E.
Right, I remember.
Which is casino centric.
Right.
So.
And we've actually come across, our case is actually a part of G2E, but we'll discuss that later.
And I've also, let's see, Genting.
Mm-hmm.
I've spoken for them, or to them.
That's good.
Yeah.
People are listening on it.
I remember Grosching was invited to speak at G2E, which he declined a few years ago.
Yeah. It's,
partly because his face would be out there.
Right.
He doesn't want people to know who he is.
I love his costumes. He sometimes he can sometimes sit in my office and I forget who I'm talking to.
Well, Groshin is probably, we were talking about him, and he's one of the sharpest APs around. Theoretician, practitioner.
That's advantage players for yes, anyone who does not players. Know what an yes. AP is.
Who's listening to your podcast that about doesn't know what an
possibly
AP is?
Poker
advantage
players.
Players.
Possibly poker players.
Poker players,
yeah.
You know.
All right, I think...
Yeah, we are...
I've got a great insight. And now I'm going to walk out shaking in my boots. Every time I go in a casino, I'm going to be, don't touch that coin, don't touch that ticket, be careful, there's security. Ah, freaky,
now,
freaky.
Now, if you ever get the opportunity, when Bob Loeb was in town, I actually met up, we had lunch, and there is no more secure feeling in the world than walking through a casino, if you're an AP, with one of the top gambling attorneys in the world.
Really? Because the top gambling attorneys in the world are not that secure.
In any event...
I will give casinos credit for one thing, because many of them know who I am and their legal departments.
Now,
I'm not going to say who, but... some of them would, by all stretches of imagination, view me as a villain or vilify me. But they don't throw me out of their casinos.
No.
I will also point out, though, that not throwing me out of their casinos is a good way for them to assure that their management's children are... have enough money to go to college. I'm not an AP.
Right. But and speaking of which, Bob Nersesian is the only non-player to ever be inducted into the Blackjack Hall of Fame.
Ta-da!
Ta-da!
Wow.
Now, that doesn't mean Bob doesn't engage in sports betting or doesn't engage in a little Blackjack play every now and again.
I don't know. I kind of like Bob's game. I'd be sticking with that, Bob.
Thank
and
you.
It sounds
for,
like you're on a
for whatever.
Maybe
just so everybody knows, we need to like put a petition for all the advantage players out there. Bob was talking heavily about trying to become a high school teacher.
None of that, Bob.
You do not want to become a high school teacher.
I need a new career.
A new career? Why don't you be a novelist? You've seemed to have written a couple books that are halfway decent.
And I'm in the middle of a pretty cool novel, too.
Really?
Good.
Yeah.
That's
when
three.
When can we expect that out?
Last year.
So get in your time machine
to
pick it up.
It's pretty slow to get these things written.
Yeah,
right.
Yes.
Especially with your
crazy
massive caseload.
Yes.
But, I actually... Writing is so much fun, but... finding a publisher isn't.
That's a problem for everyone.
And the one I'm working on is a Michigan history written a la Ken Follett. So
there you go. You can look for that in the future.
Here's something that you need to.
The name will be The Forge.
Yes. So in any event, we are with Bob Nersesian. Thank you very much, Bob, of the law offices of Nersesian and Sankiewicz, partners, marriage, and their lovely assistant Rachel. And thanks for joining us, Bob. And we will see you next week, everybody.
And don't forget those books, Bob's books.
Law for Gamblers and Beat the Players, plural. Thank you very much. Aces and Faces, everybody.
Bye.